Welcome to the Jamoti Podcast. We are all surrounded by amazing coaches and leaders. So let's get an inside look at not just what they do, but how they do what they do. After all, becoming the best versions of ourselves is Jamoti, just a matter of doing it. Coaches, the Jamoti Podcast is powered by Ballogy. Manage and measure your players' skill development and increase accountability year-round utilizing the Ballogy app. Boost inter-squad competition with drills backed by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association, including a 40-shot Ballogy skills assessment. Please visit Ballogy.com/teams for information on how you can provide this resource for your team. That was a fun trip down memory lane. I do want to talk a little bit about you and your coaching style, philosophy, and program. And like I said, it was really fun getting to be at that elite camp and just be an observer and sit and watch. One of the phrases you kept saying over and over to the guys, and you actually had them repeat it quite a bit, which I like that. I think that when they repeat things, it tends to stick a little bit more. But you kept saying the little things are the big things. The little things are the big things. And I have seen over the years, I think where coaches get in trouble is when they don't focus on those details or they don't care about them as much. Where did that influence come for you to really care about those little things?
Well, us coaches, we always think that. But over the course of the last few years, I think with social media, with videographers, with highlights, with TikTok, with all of that, I think those are big things in terms of a game-winning shot or a really good dunk or a great around-the-back pass. And I just think that the longer you're in coaching, the more you realize that your best teams are the ones that do the simple things. It's very cliche. Every coach that I hate that anybody would even listen to this, but I just think that it's important that, having a positive attitude, catching the ball in triple threat, showing up on time, giving your teammate a high five, not being a complainer. Just simple things, I feel like, are the most powerful things. And so we hear the Kobe Bryants and the Tim Grovers and the people that are very fashionable that say it now, or Inky Johnson, I think that's his last name. But it's no different with any of our teams, is that if we – the thing that I keep saying to my wife is that the teams that you say that to all the time that need to hear it, a lot of times don't end up doing it. And the teams that you say it a lot to, that you recruited or you were given players that do it well, you say it and you emphasize it, but they already do it anyways. And so, a lot of times who you are as a team is who they already are before they even show up. It's a decision and a lifestyle and a character that they already possess before you get your hour or two with them. And so we think, especially me as a younger coach and a younger head coach, I've been a head coach I've done it for 5 years, is that we think that our words matter, and they do. But I think it's so important that we think through the things that we're going to be emphasizing in the winter time, that we really think through all those things in the spring and the summer as far as who we retain and who we put on our team. And so our staff went above and beyond this last offseason of thinking about those, who's going to be a guy that's going to do the little things, who's a guy that's going to have a positive attitude. The best coach, or I shouldn't say the best coach, because I love Kelvin Sampson and Tony Bennett, but I think you could make a case that Ben McCollum at Northwest Missouri State is the best coach in college basketball. He's won 4 of the last 5 or 4 of the last 6 national championships. I just think that he's not a friend of mine. We're in the same region. We were supposed to play them in the NCAA tournament when it got canceled. We've talked about scheduling. Anyways, he's not a friend of mine. I'm not saying this because we're buddies. I think he's the best of the best. And one of the things I got him to agree to a phone call a few years ago to just tell me what he does with his job. And he said and it stayed with me, is that there's a distinct difference between first and second place people. We all think of second place as we were almost first. And we've had a few first place teams, we've had a few third place teams here at OBU. And he said, there's such a difference between a first place guy, a first place team, and a second place team. Hmm. The gap is very large between first and second place. And one of the things that they hang their hat on is that he does not want moody guys. And so he challenged me on that phone call. I've done average with it. The first thing that I thought of is that I got to be less moody as a head coach. I need to be more stable. I feel like a Matt Driscoll or a Scott Drew is really good at that. They're yeah. really good at being the same every day. You could yeah. attest to that more
no
than
doubt.
Me.
But, no doubt.
He really tried to hammer into my head that day. And I think it's just what he talks about with any coach that asks him for advice is, I don't do moody people. Like, I want upbeat, positive, outgoing, hardworking young men, and then we can figure out their basketball. And so I must have read that. If I've read it 100 times, I must have read it 1,000 times in the last 6 months is, you know, put a nail or a hammer on my head the next time I take a moody guy. You know, take positive, upbeat guys, and then we can work on their basketball.
That's a good word. You know, and I thought a lot about the ownership that you feel or you have as a college coach, the fact that you are choosing these guys that come in. If they have deficiencies in that area or any area, it is a little bit on you. You chose them. What's your advice to a high school coach where I don't necessarily choose the guys that come in the gym, but we also want to have some of those same habits? It's funny you mentioned that because this morning at Second Period Athletics, we talked about enthusiasm is kind of what we're talking about this week, and energy vampires came up. You know, John Gordon and how, hey, you don't want to suck the life out of the gym. Don't suck. Be an energy giver. So I'm trying to work with them on that. But what's your advice to, instead of, we can't just say, hey, no, you guys get out of here. This is who God put in the gym. How do we make them better in those areas?
Well, us acting as head coaches, no matter what level it is, as if we're doing selecting, we are selecting to an extent, but the recruiting swings both ways. The kids are selecting too. So it's not that we just go out and just pick whoever we want. I mean, we're trying to see who's good enough, who we can get, who's gettable, who can visit, all the things that go into recruiting. But I understand the premise of your question. I think that positive peer pressure is powerful. The times when our team has been split halfway, as far as you have guys that could go positive habits, positive attitude, positive experience, and then you have they're kind of the middle ground. You have kids that are, it doesn't matter where they would have gone, they would have played well, they would have had a good attitude, that's how they were raised, that's who they are. It really, there's nothing like if anybody's watched that Netflix special of the Swamp Kings.
I'm on it right now. Yeah.
Okay. Tim Tebow would have had a high level of success wherever he would have gone. He's that type of dude. But there are many guys on that Florida team that ended up being a product of the people that they were around. And I know it's fashionable to talk about, they had a bunch of players arrested. There's a bunch of players that got in trouble after they left the program. But if you really watch the documentary, and what I try to do when I watch documentaries is that we all view all of the Tim Tebows and the Marvin Harrisons and the Aaron Hernandez, the young man who got in a lot of trouble. We all try to view them through the lens of what we see of them today. But when you're watching that, try to do your best to try to put yourself in that environment. Like, that was Urban Meyer, not in 2023. That's Urban Meyer in 2004, whatever it is. And so just to watch that and to watch those young men in the weight room, to watch those young men you know, they didn't know that they were going to be able to beat South Carolina or to beat LSU. And so Tim, just being Tim, just being who he was, well, if you watched it and you listened, he was that way in high school. I mean, they showed a clip of him being in the huddle with his high school team, and it's no different than the huddle where he gets in the huddle with Florida that went viral, where he says, everybody get in here, and he's very passionate and very has some anger and competitiveness. Well, they showed a clip on that documentary about how he was in high school. And so to answer your question about I just think that your staffs, for a Division II coach, I'll have a staff of four this year, which will be the largest staff that we've ever had. Normally, a Division II or an NEIA or a low Division I school will have three or four men that will be with the kids. So whoever those people are, those people need to be all in on, and they normally are, and your staff is no different in that way. But I do think there's something to the encouragement of a behavior is important, but I do think that there comes a time when you have to say, hey, we've talked about it. I've encouraged it. I've talked to your parents about it. You understand the why. That's not being adhered to today, and you've lost your opportunity this morning to be with the team. Now, you don't ever want to do that with a young man, but I do think that they have to know that playing time, uniforms, getting to travel, getting to be on the team is a privilege. Yeah. And so the dilemma that we all face as coaches is, and all the veteran coaches, and in my life, my veteran coaches are Richie McKay, Bob Hoffman, Kelvin Sampson. Those are the men that I work for, Dale Lehrer at Texas A&M. And so they all circle back to, are you going to enforce that rule or enforce that standard or enforce that value with your best player? And so that's the tricky part of having a culture of energy givers, is what if your best player is not an energy giver?
Yeah.
How are you going to handle that?
Yeah.
And so we would all like to say that there's no way, but you're probably going to work with that young man a little bit more than if it was your 15th man.
Yep. And I think a great point that you made was about the split in the locker room. Like, not that you're going to, I mean, great. It would be great to have 100% buy-in. Pretty rare. I don't care what level you're at, pretty rare, but you're right on the money. That positive peer pressure, if you could get 60, 75, 80%, some of your major stakeholders in the program on board, in line, you know, saying the same thing, the same mission as you, that positive peer pressure, you're more likely to be able to bring those others up. So early on in the year, it's those individual meetings. It's also getting the input of the players. Like, you guys want a championship environment. What are some ways that we can get there? Maybe you're leading them to what you want, but when they're making those decisions and they have more ownership, I think that percentage of people that do have buy-in is higher, might help bring the last 10, 15, 20%.
Yeah. And, you know, the part about being a head coach that you're never prepared for, because normally an assistant that gets a head coaching job, on some level, he's well-liked in the profession, well-liked by an AD, well-liked by the players that have played for him, is that when you become a head coach, probably the worst part of the job is this principle of not every coach is for every player and not every player is for every head coach. And so I find that at times to be disheartening, because our nature as a coaching profession is that we want to be the difference maker. We want to be, you know, as Coach Saban always says, is if you want to be well-liked, go sell ice cream and all that. But the nature of us as coaches is we do want our players to want to be around us and want to come over to the house and like our family and like our children and like our wives. But the nature of what we do is that basketball, there's only five kids that get to be out there. And just because you put a certain amount of kids out there for so many minutes, there's times where it's not a fit. for the player. It's not a fit for the coach. And so that's the part of being a head coach that I don't like.
Yeah.
Because you want to have 100, just like all the games, you want to win all the games. But I think as a coaching profession, I think if you were to really get inside the hearts and the minds of the coaching profession in basketball, or at least the coaches that I've been around, is they want it to work with every single player. And the fact of the matter is that it doesn't. It's not going to work with every single kid in your program. And those parents, not every parent is going to see the side of you that your wife or your AD or your president or your, we all have those players that we got pictures up in our office of graduations and weddings and all that. And not every player, it's going to end up in that way. And so I struggle with that a lot. I miss that part of being an assistant coach where, you know, when it came to playing time and it came to discipline, like, and it came to complaining, that you could just kind of slide on out from that and just say, I know, coach is on.
Oh, man, I wish I could help you there. That's
yeah. And so I do think that that's important this time of year, because normally, like, we had a workout yesterday. Normally this time of year, you're in the gym, there's so much optimism, there's a lot of hope, there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of enthusiasm, or there is in our gym. And so I was home last night with my wife, and I just said, you know, these games can do something to these relationships that coaches, that are kind of the unintended consequences of the games, because the kids are in the gym with you right now. They're not worried of, like, their parents didn't watch practice, and they're not, like, when you get to the game, there are a lot of times there's a lot of traps for coaches. You know, well, I know that you said coach was spending time with you and that you liked him and you trusted him. Well, if he really felt that way about you, then he would have played you more.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's not true of us as a coaching community. It's not. And so I would just, I'm trying to encourage myself, but those that are listening, I would just be an encouragement of that it goes on with everyone. Every coach is fighting that same battle. And I've had several older coaches and mentors to say, no matter what gets thrown back at you when it comes to the playing time portion of it, is that keep showing up for those kids anyways, because sometimes a kid may have to say something to a parent or a sibling or a friend that's really not how he feels about you in that moment. They know that it's fair. Yeah. They know that you love them. They do trust you. And the kids normally do know who the better players are. And so, but sometimes that's not really what they can say when mom or dad is getting after them. Like, well, I thought, you know, I talked with coach last week and coach said that you're doing great. Well, is he lying to me? And those are awkward positions for a young person to be in. And so I don't like that part of our profession. I do know that it collides a lot with us, is that we're not solely in charge of just winning, but winning is a part of the business. And so we're trying to put our best foot forward as coaches and programs to win. And the relationship piece is getting harder and harder with the transfer portal. And with,
I bet, yeah.
I know the higher levels are dealing with the NLI or the, did I say that right?
My wife's NIL. Yeah, NIL. Okay. Yeah.
I always mess that up.
That's okay.
But, yeah, and so keep showing up anyways. Keep building relationships. And even if it's with a sophomore who doesn't end up becoming a junior in your program, he's going to be a junior somewhere.
Yep.
And so that rings a little hollow at times with coaches that feel like they're fighting for their livelihood. But I do think it's accurate in how God would want us to handle it.
Thank you for checking out today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast, share it with your fellow coaches, and find us on social media for what's coming up next on the Jamoti Podcast. It's just a matter of doing it.